Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owlpost for the week is freshly delivered. I am just one of your hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the ever-present, ever-enjoyable, wonderful, and talented Drea Kaufman.
Hello, and everly pregnant feeling.
Well, you know, by the time people hear this, you might not be so pregnant.
That is true. By the time you all hear this, I will have had my child, mm-hmm. just to be clear.
Yeah, so, which is super exciting. So give future you a high five.
Yeah, I'm going to give past me a little condolence pat, too, while we're at it. There is an end.
Oh, man. Well, we're so excited to be here talking about The Flight of the Fat Lady, which is the name of the chapter. We're not denigrating anyone.
We're not talking about me and being pregnant again.
No, I would never say that, because as a man, you never comment on a woman's weight, ever. So, anyway, you can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, and you can find us online at thenerdparty.com, where if you're there, you can find all the shows on the network. And of course, you can hit contact and choose a show, choose Outpost, and you could send us an email if you'd like. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. And then a really good place to look us up and tell us what you think of the show is over on iTunes and Apple Podcasts, giving us a star rating review. Helps more people find out the show, and definitely a good idea to do that, because if you do, we'll call you out in the show, and thank you for giving us that star rating review. So, now, Drea, talking about this chapter, I kind of really think it's interesting. You know, we harped on, well, you know, the last chapter, how much of a jerk Malfoy is, and, well, sadly, the chapter starts with Malfoy being a jerk.
Shocker. I'm shocked.
I know. It's like he hasn't learned his lesson yet. I wonder why.
It's like he's a 13-year-old little jerk face.
He is.
No offense to any 13-year-old like, little jerk faces
yes,
out there.
He's like a turd pie, you know? Nobody wants him, you know? I mean, it's just...
Not to be confused with a Frito pie, which everybody
exactly.
wants.
Exactly. But yeah, nobody... Yeah, this kid, he's no good. And it's so frustrating, too, and when you see it, because... He's just making fun of Lupin and the way he dresses. And again, I think she's doing a really good job of showing the way that people put down those who they really don't have a reason to put down by commenting on things that don't really matter, like the way somebody dresses.
Like, he doesn't give Malfoy a free pass because he knows Malfoy's a jerk. And so instead of, I don't know, not being a jerk, he decides just to insult his robes and how he dresses. And then he looks a little, you know, shambly.
Yeah, that he basically doesn't look like a Malfoy in the best dress ever, you know.
Like, he does not look like the winner of Who Wore It Best.
No, he does not, unfortunately.
But who cares?
Yeah, nobody. It's interesting, too, because the way that this chapter kind of at the very beginning here kind of runs through the different classes. Snape is furious. He's been treating Neville even worse because of what he heard about from Lupin's class, where, of course, Snape the Bogart turned into, Snape wearing
Snape the crossdresser.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, not a good look for him. And Trelawney's class continues to be obnoxious for Harry because he's always on his deathbed in her class, which I feel really bad for the guy.
I love that he talks about Lavender and Pavati also like talking in hushed tones to him like he's on his deathbed. It just cracked me up.
You can kind of just see him being like, seriously, I'm fine. And then, you know, Care Magical Creatures hasn't been as great ever since the incident with the Hippogriff because, well, it's turned out to be really boring. And they're taking care of flober worms, which honestly just sounds kind of disgusting.
It sounds like that class you took when you were in like I don't know about you, but in like fourth grade where you had to like raise the little mealworms yes. and watch the little mealworms mm-hmm. and you're like, this was really cool when you first saw them hatch. And then you're like, this is incredibly boring.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's also interesting too, because we finally get Quidditch here and
kind of
in the sense that, what it is they're finally getting back to practicing. And I do kind of really like that. This is going to be Oliver Wood's last year. He really wants to win, and he's spending a lot of time trying.
Well, but he's like very focused on the fact that this is his last shot, and it's nobody's fault, mm-hmm. but they still haven't won, and he'd really yes. like to win before yes. he leaves Hogwarts.
And it's...
Just saying.
Yeah. And I love the way he's being so diplomatic, because he can't really blame Harry and everything that's happened, especially over the last 2 years. I mean, you know, Harry saved everybody's life twice, so... But I do love...
Not going to trivialize that, exactly. but I would like to win the house. Exactly. Just saying.
And it's phenomenal. And then what's kind of interesting is that after that, they're all hanging out and they're doing their homework. And Ron mentions that Scabbers hasn't been doing too good and he's in his bag. And Crookshanks, kind of out of nowhere, just attacks the bag looking for Scabbers, and we end up with this massive chase all around the common room looking for Scabbers and trying to get him safe from Crookshanks, and it causes another rift between Ron and Hermione.
It is really interesting. She's just like, oh, he's a cat, you know, Crookshanks is a cat and they chase mice and like that's what they do, and like, why are you blaming, you know, Crookshanks or whatever? But then when he's like, but he didn't like react until I mentioned Scabbers. It's like, as soon as I said something, he keyed in, and you're like, no way. But then you're like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Did he?
There is something really interesting, because Ron's like, there's just something really funny about that animal. And Hermione, of course, just being so logical and everything, is like, oh, rubbish, whatever. And what's funny is that she kind of deals with Lavender the same way the next day in Transfiguration, because Lavender is very sad because the day that was prophesied and the thing that she was fearing most, she says, has happened, and that her rabbit, Bingy, has been attacked by a fox and died. And the way Hermione deals with this is kind of hysterical.
It's exactly what I would say to Lavender. Like, that I was reading it and I was like, yep. Thanks, Hermione. Covered all the points for me. I'm good now. Like, I would be equally annoyed and be like, seriously, are we really talking about this? Get over it.
Well, and it is so funny because she kind of walks through it very logically. Like, were you worried about your bunny getting attacked by a fox? And she's like, well, no.
Well, not a fox, but I mean, I was worried about my bunny dying. Why was it old? No, it was a baby. Oh. And then it's like, see, this is what I feared the most on October the 16th. She's like, well, but this didn't happen today.
Yeah, she just found out about it
different day.
Yeah, and it's very funny because Ron's like, don't mind her. She doesn't care about other people's pets very much. But it is very funny because, I mean, my wife and her mother are huge pet people. Like, very big pet people. And so the logic of pet people is different than the logic of non-pet people. I'm just going to put it that way. It's very...
I think it depends, because I love my cats more than anything on the planet, which you would see if you've ever been to any of my social media. let's be honest here. They're like children to me. But I also don't think I would believe a prophecy came true because they happened to find out that they had died on a specific date. Like, I'd still be like devastated and upset like a pet person would, but I don't know that necessarily means that I would believe Trelawney's prophecy about me from months ago. Like, I don't still think I would try to force that into working. I feel like she's trying to force it into happening.
Well,
like, she wants to believe it.
No, I think that you're right. She is definitely predisposed to believe what Trelawney said. And It's
she's a Trelawney. Yes.
She's a Trelawney light.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. I like that better.
Well, and it's really frustrating for Harry because he's very worried because he's pretty sure he's not gonna get to go to Hogsmeade with everybody, and Ron has kind of convinced him, like, you should just ask McGonagall. She'll sign it for you. She'll let you go. And, you know, I mean, Harry really wants to go. So he asks her after their class and definitely doesn't get the answer that he wants.
Yeah, it's pretty similar to the movie and how it happens, like, you know, nope, can't do it. Parent or guardian is who it has to be. I love that when we're talking about it, though, Neville's before Harry and is like, I swear I had it. And then she's like, your grandma mailed it. She thought that would be safer.
Yes, that was awesome. Well, and I also like that when Ron finds out that she said no, Ron calls her a bunch of names that greatly annoyed Hermione. And it was very funny to me because, as we've talked about, well, McGonagall and Hermione are kind of the same person, just separated by a very, you know, a lot of
large
years.
Age
yeah,
gap.
A large age gap. And I think that's very funny because I think Hermione feels attacked when somebody attacks her, and it's funny. Well,
it's like when you're at work or at school and someone makes fun of or insults like your favorite boss or your favorite teacher, and you are like a little personally offended by it, and you know, she probably feels a little bit like it's uncalled for, like it's, you know, she can see McGonagall going either way, and mm-hmm. she probably feels like it's probably safer for Harry anyway. Yeah. And blah 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 blah. So I mean, she's not like terribly upset about it, but you know, she's more upset that Ron's calling all these names versus like McGonagall not signing the sheet.
Yes.
So
and it's interesting too, because you know, the next day is Halloween and the kids are getting to go to Hogsmeade, and Harry is trying to find something to do and keeps walking into people he doesn't want to walk into, like going to the common room and calling Creevy, running into Filch, you know. And I love this because he just kind of randomly bumps into Professor Lupin, and Lupin invites him in to hang out, and they get to have a conversation. And it's just a really, like, I think this is, you know, I was talking last time about how there seemed to be a homier feeling. I think this is one of the places where that really starts to come into being. Because it's interesting to watch Harry kind of make, I don't know, a friend yet out of Lupin, but they're definitely getting closer than he's been to any of the other teachers other than Dumbledore. And Dumbledore's different. He's not the teacher. He is Professor Dumbledore, but he's also the headmaster and nobody has classes with him and all that kind of stuff. So, but they get to see he gets to see a Grindylow for the first time, which I think is really cool. And
Lupin just kind of treats him, I don't know, not all the other teachers have treated him like he's different because he's Harry Potter, right? Like, Lockhart was obsessed with his fame and Quirrell was just socially awkward for everybody. And, you know, McGonagall even kind of treats him a little bit differently. She gives him a pass because she knows a lot of it's out of his control and he kind of just wants to be treated like normal. And I think this is really the first teacher who just treats him like another student. Like, Harry could see Lupin inviting any student who's just chilling alone in the hallway, not at Hogsmeade, like this. Like, if Neville hadn't been able to go, I could see, you know, you could see Lupin inviting Neville in. So I think it's kind of the first time anyone sort of treated Harry just like a student, like anybody else. And he's like kind of thrown off by it. He doesn't really know what to do with it, but he's like, but I like it, but I'm confused.
Yes. Well, and I love the way the conversation flows, because Lupin asks him if he wants some tea. And Harry's like, okay, sure. You know, and so, which is, you know, I think a very British way of kind of putting somebody at ease. And, you know, he says, well, I only have bags. I dare say you have had enough of tea leaves. And Harry's like, how did you know about that? And so they have this conversation, which I think is really interesting, because he asks Harry if he's, you know, worried about the situation. And Harry's like, no. Like, just immediately says no. And then he thinks about telling Lupin about what he saw at Magnolia Crescent, but he doesn't.
Well, and then he thinks about bringing up the fact that ever since the last class, where, you know, Lupin sort of interjected himself in between Harry and the Boggart, it sort of bothered him, and he started thinking whether, you know, he was thinking he was weak because he passed out on the train, or, you know, like, because there's all these rumors about Sirius Black and Harry Potter, like, you know, he's just kind of sensitive about that, and he's just sort of like, do I say something? Do I not say something?
Well, and I love that he does, because he asks him straight up, and he asks him why you didn't let me fight it. Mm-hmm. And I love Lupin's answer. And he's like, well, I mean, I assumed that if it faced you, it would take the shape of Lord Voldemort. And immediately Harry is startled, because nobody except for Dumbledore has ever said Voldemort's name to him.
Which is interesting, and to me is kind of a tip off too. Like, why is it that some people will use the name and some people won't? So, like, you'll feel, we'll, knowing the storyline, you know why. But it's just interesting. It's sort of like this one other thing that makes Lupin very different from everybody else that is, like, key. And you're like, I feel like I should remember this. I feel like I need to hang on to this. This is something to file away under important and come back to. Because, like we've said many times, she doesn't do anything without purpose.
Yes. Well, and I mean, I think it kind of puts Harry at ease, because they continue on the conversation, you know, because Harry confesses that, you know, I did think of Voldemort first, but then I thought of the Dementors. And Lupin, I think, says something surprising to Harry, which it is surprising to him. He says, you know, I'm pretty impressed. You know, that suggests what you fear most is fear. And that's very wise. And he, you know, admits, so, you know, if you think that I was thinking you weren't capable of fighting the Boggart, and Harry's like, well, you know, yeah. And before they can really continue the conversation, Snape comes in with a glowing goblet of some sort of potion.
Like that, smoking.
Yes.
Like, I imagine it looks like it's got a big
very
thing of dry
ominous.
Ice in it. Yeah.
And he's got this for Lupin to drink. And they, you know, talk about the fact that, you know, if you need more, I've got more, Snape says. He's got a whole cauldron full. And that Lupin says, thank you. And the fact that, hey, that's great. I will probably have to take again some tomorrow. I love how Lupin says, you know, like, oh, it, you know, I'm very blessed to have Snape here. You know, I'm not very good with potions, and this is a extremely tough one to make, and Snape is wonderful to make it for me. And I love how Harry's like,
okay.
Well, you know that Snape is really interested in the dark arts.
I think it's so interesting, though, that how, even before you get to that part, how cordial, like, Snape and Lupin are, considering the only time we've ever really seen Snape is when he's being a total class A jerk, like we talked about last episode. That this is kind of the first time where he doesn't really do or say anything too contrary. Like, he could have made snide remarks at Harry.
Yes.
He could have made, you know, snipping remarks at Lupin, but, like, he doesn't. He just is kind of like, here's what you asked for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have more if you need it. Like, let me know. Otherwise, I'll see you around. Like, it's just very, very, like, it's not even formal. It is very cordial. And
yes.
You're just like, huh?
And it's the, what? I feel like it's almost the first time you've seen Snape be like that to anyone.
Yeah. And you wouldn't expect it.
No, not at all. I mean, I even rereading it again, I you know, you get so used to kind of like the movie idea. Like, this is just very, like, it doesn't seem to that there's any sneer in his voice or anything like that. It's just straight up, like, friendly, almost. Like, it comes across friendly.
Co-worker to co-worker.
I love when Hermione and Ron come back, and Harry's telling this to them, and Ron's like, his mouth just falls open. Lupin drank it? Is he mad? Like, it's just so funny.
But then here's Hermione with the logic again. Like, but do you really think Snape would poison him with Harry there?
Right.
Like, someone saw what happened. Do you really think that would still be the case? And everyone's like, huh.
Good point. Well, and I love this too, that they go to the feast and it's just a wonderful feast, and Harry is his spirits have been lifted. I feel like, you know, the joy of having spent some time with the professor, getting some answers, made to feel better about himself, you know, all of that, dining with his friends at the feast, everything is getting better until they go up to the Gryffindor common room, or at least they try to, and the fat lady has disappeared from her portrait, and it's been slashed viciously.
Well, before we talk about the fat lady, can we talk about the fact that why don't we have Halloween feasts? Because I feel like my life would be better with Halloween feasts.
I think that's a good call. I think we should make that a thing. Hashtag Halloween feasts.
I don't know why we don't do them anymore. I don't know if it's just a British thing. I don't know if it's just a Harry Potter thing. But like, I kind of want a Halloween feast. And I kind of want to know what they ate.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I feel like it was probably really good. I'm with you. Hashtag Halloween
feast.
Guessing
pumpkin.
Yep.
Guessing pumpkin. Who knows? But yes. Hashtag Halloween feast. Let's make this happen.
Let's do it. So it turns out that not only does the loss of the fat lady and the destruction of her portrait bring in Percy, but it also brings in Dumbledore, which, you know, something big is happening when Dumbledore comes around. And
we don't really know the significance to this picture being destroyed, right? Like, for all we know, that could happen all the time. Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, they move amongst portraits all the time. So yep. This could be pretty natural that she's just kind of being flighty, you know, flight of the fat lady. But when Percy calls Dumbledore, that's when you're like, oh, snap.
Yeah, something's amiss. And I love that, again, we get Peeves. Like, I wish that he had been in the movies. And Peeves is like, well, you're not going to find her. She's a horrible mess. She's hiding in one of the other portraits. And he tells...
He did a really nasty job to her.
Exactly. And Dumbledore's like, who? Sirius Black. And that's how the chapter ends. Like,
dun, dun,
it is kind of a dun, dun, dun. And like, leaving us on that cliffhanger of that Sirius Black,
like a soap opera,
has somehow been in the castle and attacked the fat lady's portrait. I'm ready for the next chapter.
I feel like it was like her most soap opera-y ending so far.
I do think you're absolutely right.
We need like a pipe organ, and then next week on...
Next week on Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Da-da-da-da-da!
A portrait attacked. A fat lady gone. And a dark menace inside the castle. Find out this week on Harry Potter.
All of that was wonderful. Exactly. That's exactly what it would be.
Oh, gosh. Well,
so stay tuned next week.
Exactly. You'll have to wait till next week. But if people want to catch up with you, Drea, and talk to you about the baby, wish you well, where can they find you on Twitter?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN. And be prepared for baby pictures, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of them.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02, as well as on Instagram under the same name. Here on the network, doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars, so check that out. I'm on the Trek FM network, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones on The Orb. And then the General Geek Show at the 602 Club, talking about all the fandoms we love. We are not just tied to one. So make sure you check that out. You won't want to miss it. And last but not least, I'm doing a show called Cinema Stories, talking about film through the lens of faith. And you can find all of those wherever you get your podcasts. But thank you so much for checking your Owl Post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.